The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Hello and welcome to a Hard Yards Extra. I'm Andy McGeady. Make sure to check out Monday's regular episode of the show if you missed it, and subscribe to The Hard Yards on iTunes, SoundCloud and all good podcast apps to get it straight to your phone. Today, I was joined in studio by Gavin Hastings of Scotland and the Lions, and we had a little chat.
We're roaring.
I am delighted to be joined in studio today by Scotland and Lions legend, Gavin Hastings. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm not sure I'm a legend, though.
No?
Nah.
What would you say you are?
Former rugby player.
Former rugby player.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah?
Not a legend, though.
No?
Legends...
I will differ. Okay, so captain the British and Irish Lions, played an awful lot of games for Scotland, scored an awful lot of points for Scotland, fairly well known. It qualifies a lot of legend boxes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I was being modest.
You were the top point scorer for the Lions until a certain Mr. Wilkinson came along.
No, I'm actually still the top point scorer for the Lions.
Are you?
I am, genuinely.
Go on.
Go on. No, there's... there was one game that our Johnny played that was out with a tour, and it seems to have been included in the test match records.
So that's where his 67 to 66 comes
correct.
From.
Right. Well, yeah. I would argue that playing six test matches on the tour is... that's where the record should start. And if you play a match before the tour starts, then that is another test match. But I don't think necessarily it should be included in Lions records.
That's anyway. Good. Because I had your try as a four-pointer and his was a five-pointer, and that was the difference. But yours is much better.
It's okay. I'm over it now. I just thought I'd mention it, though.
Yeah. Scotland are in town this weekend. You had a very good record against Ireland as a player.
Well, we've paid the price for that ever since, and our record in the Six Nations has not been quite so good. Victories few and far between, but I think there's a bit of optimism coming into Saturday's game, and quite looking forward to it, as indeed most Scots supporters always do when they come to Ireland. And there's a great camaraderie, I think, between two sets of supporters, and friendships go back an awful long way. And I think by common consent, most of the Irish like the Scots coming into town, and we spend our fair bit of cash in the bars, and have the odd pint of the black stuff, which is pretty good.
This is true. I will say that not all the Irish men like the Scots coming into town, because you all come in kilts, and no Irishman can compete for the attention of ladies when there's kilts around, I'll tell you that much.
Well, you're saying that, but it is a national trait that I think Scottish rugby supporters like putting the kilt on and like coming into town and like... singing and having a good time in the build up to the game. As I say, many occasions in the last sort of 16, 17 years or so, we've not been able to enjoy ourselves quite as much after the game because of the result. But nonetheless, it is it's always something that we enjoy coming to Ireland, as I say, and enjoying the camaraderie that I think exists between two sets of supporters.
So Scotland beating France and England back-to-back, that's pretty good.
Well, it was certainly good after a bit of a humbling defeat in Cardiff a few weeks ago. So, we've at least got a tail up a bit, and, we can come to Dublin for Saturday with a bit of optimism and confidence, and I think Gregor Townsend, the Scotland coach, will have a few tricks up his sleeve. Whether that's good enough to beat Ireland, we can't tell at this stage, but I think Joe Schmidt is a very astute and competent coach, and I have no doubt that the task that lies ahead for the Scottish team is greater than the one that faced them a few weeks ago, and certainly running into France and England. I think we've really got to try and get on to another level. Were we to be, or should we be victorious at the weekend?
Gregor played 13 the last time you played against Ireland. Did you think back then that he'd grow up to be national coach?
Well, Gregor's, he's a highly intelligent man. He's a very ambitious man. I think, you know, when he was given an opportunity by Andy Robinson, the then Scotland coach, to come in to the setup upon his sort of retirement from international rugby, I think it was fairly obvious at that stage that Gregor was going to be the Scotland coach at one time. I think what he's been able to do, and you know, is just take the team on to another level. And he did that first with Glasgow a few years ago when he took over from Sean Laleen. And now he's done this in a very short space of time since taking over from Vern Cotter at the end of last year's Six Nations. So, you know, he's got the players certainly believing in themselves and you know, playing an exciting brand of rugby that's really, I guess, epitomised by the fortunes of Finn Russell at standoff.
Yeah, he's good to watch when he's on form, isn't he?
Well, you've got a smile on your face there.
It is,
because he brings a smile to people's faces. And you're right, he is good to watch when he's on form. You might be inclined to hope that he's not going to be in form on Saturday. I would share the opposite view. But
I hope he tries everything on Saturday.
I think he will try everything. And he pretty much did that a fortnight ago against England. And, you know, I was saying earlier that he's quite a contrast to Johnny Sexton at standoff, who plays a game, you know, as a consummate professional, and his will to win is there for all to see. It's in his expression and the way that he is, you know, very much a modern day rugby player, I think, and epitomises the Irish spirit. But he's a very competent player, Johnny Sexton. I think he's moulded into become one of the great controlling fly halves, and that's, I find this an interesting contrast between the respective fly halves for Saturday, and one that I think will be a very interesting battle.
Mm. Gregor Townsend's doing this despite there are still only being two professional sides in Scotland.
Yeah.
You've played your entire career in the amateur game, and are you surprised that all these years later we've got two professional sides supporting essentially the Scottish test setup?
Am I surprised? Possibly not. It's not ideal, and no one, I think, is suggesting that it is ideal. The fact is that we do have a number of players in the Scotland setup that are plying the trade outside of Scotland, which you have to say would have to happen. But nonetheless, Glasgow and Edinburgh supply the bulk of the squad, if you like, and you know, that's important that that's the case, and in many respects perhaps we don't have the intense rivalries, I think, that maybe the Irish provincial sides do, in particular Leinster and Munster, but you know, there's no doubt that Irish rugby, the international rugby, has become very, very strong over the last 10 years or so because of the strength of the Irish provincial sides and doing so well in Europe. And, you know, Glasgow have managed to win the Pro 12 as it was a couple of years ago. And I think that, you know, they've only made the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup on one occasion. I think Edinburgh have done it on two occasions. And it's not easy to build success when you're not involved at the business end, I think, of major club games. So, you know,
Do you think Scotland could actually support a third team, be it Borders?
I don't necessarily think it would be in Scotland.
Okay.
I think through London Scottish, it would be, for me, the most obvious place for that to be, and if somehow London Scottish could play in the Pro 14, then that would be great.
We're a welcoming parish.
Aye.
Yeah.
Well, I think it would make a lot of sense, and you know, who knows what might happen in the future, but I think it would be obvious for London Scottish to become the third professional setup, pushing players into the Scottish national side.
Hmm. So as I said, you played as an amateur. You were a surveyor.
I was. Chartered.
That was your bread
chartered,
and butter.
No less.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, you look back and clearly, you know, in the heady days of amateurism, we all thought that we were doing quite well and you know, training pretty hard. And when you remember that you were working on the Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday of international weekends. I mean, it's just bonkers to think that now.
So what was your routine? You worked your full days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, probably tried to squeeze as much into those three as possible, and then...
Well, I wouldn't necessarily go as far as that. I mean, it might not be concentration levels as deep... As other weeks in the year, but I remember being pretty potty in the training. I mean, we would train, we would play the previous Saturday more often than not, train with the Scotland team on the Sunday, go back to work on the Monday, probably do a light session Monday, go training with your club side on the Tuesday, and then, you know, maybe have Wednesday off and come together, certainly in the early days, on the Thursday morning, and train for about 3.5 hours on the Thursday. I mean, just bonkers. And then go and have a light run on the Friday, and that's when you would travel to... Oh, you would travel to away games on the Thursday. And just great excitement being away and travelling in a chartered plane, maybe in those days, and staying in a nice hotel and stuffing yourself with nice food, you know? I mean, just... bears no relation to what the players do just now.
Would you have liked to be a full professional?
No.
No? Why?
I think anyone of my era, if you like, that we sort of morphed into, you know, we were lucky. We went away every summer to, you know, a foreign country, and you know, I went at least every second year, at least if not every year, to, you know, World Cups in New Zealand, in South Africa. We toured with Scotland to New Zealand, to Australia, you know, Canada and the USA. And so basically most summers you were playing rugby, and that was your taste of being a full-time rugby player. Clearly not a professional, because you weren't getting paid for it, but that was enough for me. I enjoyed training over a period of weeks and practicing your kicking, and I always felt I did pretty well on tour, because, you know, you weren't being distracted by anyone necessarily from work, and you were away from home, and so you were there just on this, you know, adventure with all your mates from the Scotland team or the Lions team, and I loved it. I just absolutely loved it. But you know, you came home, you go on holiday, and you go and have a few weeks off and whatever else, and then you'd eventually get back to training. But no, I wouldn't want to be a full time pro.
Okay, so you would not have liked to be a professional. Were you paid as an amateur?
No,
because John Beattie had a great line in The Scotsman in 1993, when he said that the taxman frightened him by how much he knew about his little £50 receipts and those little payments every so often.
I'll be honest and frank, I never ever got paid to play rugby, never ever. And you know, back in the day, you claimed expenses and whatever else. Now, clear, you probably fiddled your expenses a wee bit and whatever, but there's a world of difference between claiming an extra £50 and being paid however much the England rugby players
are
being paid.
This is what John Beattie was getting at. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, you know, I have no qualms. I mean, nobody would write a cheque or you know, put money in your account as a result of playing for your country or for the Lions. So, you know, I'm clear in that I never received any payment for playing.
In fact, the next year you were talking about the inevitability of professionalism. And there's a nice line that you had at the time, was that saying some countries are driving articulated lorries through the regulations.
Yeah.
So at the time you were not being paid. You might have got a little extra expenses every so often, but it was not pay for play.
No.
What were you seeing outside your country?
Well, I think you used to hear sort of stories, and the fact, I mean, obviously back in the day, I mean, Will Carling never really had a job, David Campese never had a job for you know, for his whole career in many respects. So, look, it wasn't a major issue for me, because, you know, we had jobs and we were being paid for those jobs. So none of us went into rugby because we wanted or expected to get paid, because it was obviously very much an amateur game. But clearly with the advent of Rugby World Cup in 1987 and seeing that was a pretty much a Mickey Mouse tournament, you know, without any of the real commercial or hospitality sponsors and engagements that would be going on.
The commercial machine that accompanies it now.
And Rugby World Cup is just huge now. And you know, the Lions was tiny by comparison to what it is now. So, you know, we were just on this great big adventure. And it became fairly apparent, I think, by the time of the World Cup in 1995 in South Africa, the third Rugby World Cup, that the thing was there and professional rugby was going to exist pretty quickly thereafter, as so it proved. I mean, it became professional within 3 months of the Rugby World Cup ending.
And that was the end of your career as well?
Correct.
Yeah. So I said you did have a good record against Ireland. I looked up some players who've got better records, having played 10 times. There's not many, right? But one of them's your brother.
Uh-huh.
So you imagine you played with Scott for a long time, first test and last test together. What was it like playing with your brother?
It was good. You know, I think we had a sort of... Scott's one of three brothers that I have. I've got an older brother, and then there's me, Scott, and the youngest brother as well. My older brother sort of blazed the trail a wee bit and played for Scotland Schoolboys and Scotland Under 21, and then he went off to Australia. So we had a bit of that, and then I went off and played for the Schoolboys and Under 21s, and Scott followed me, and then the youngest brother was pretty... you know, he had a tough act to follow, being the fourth line of boys, and you know, but he played rugby for fun and enjoyed himself. But you know, playing with Scott, we always got on very well. We were 2 years apart in school, and then I played rugby for my former pupil side, Watsonians, and Scott went down to Newcastle Poly, as it was in those days, and played down for Northern Rugby Club. And then I went down south, played for London Scottish as well as Cambridge, and Scott finished his degree and came up and played. So really, before we played together at for Scotland in 1986, we hardly played any games together, you know, and it was pretty strange then making our debuts. And imagine how our parents must have felt, you know, huge sense of worth and value, I'd suggest, when their two of their four sons are playing together for the first time for Scotland. And, you know, they were great supporters of ours and following us all over the world with the Lions and with Scotland, and as indeed my other brothers did as well. So, you know, it was always good fun, and we treated it as such.
Your son's playing. He's playing for Glasgow, Adam. He's getting on well.
He's doing all right, yeah.
Yeah.
Bit more game time would be nice for him, but he's getting there. And
there's a few lads, you know, we'll ahead see. Of him in the queue. One less come this summer.
Well, one less come this summer. And, you know, I think his challenge is to prove to Dave Rennie and the rest of the coaches at Glasgow that he's capable of filling his shoes. And, you know, I think he's maybe... if he gets an opportunity between now and the end of the season, hopefully he'll be able to convince him that yes, he is. But
his halfback partner George Horn's been drafted in, so young players are getting recognised.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's good to see. I think Gregor's never been afraid of bringing the youngsters in, and you know, if they were in New Zealand they'd get a shot, and if they're probably in Ireland, you know, there's a lot of the Irish guys that are coming through as well. So, you know, professional sport is about young people. It's not about old people, it's about young people, and there's always going to be another youngster coming through, and that's what it's, and you know, if you're brave enough and give them a shot, then it's not often I don't think they let you down. So they have huge energy, huge enthusiasm, no little talent, and you know, that's all good cases. Getting a good blend between youth and experience, I think, is a healthy recipe.
Speaking of New Zealand, is it true you're called Paddy in New Zealand?
It is. You're going to ask me why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Okay, good story, fun story. But in 1987, I stayed on after the Rugby World Cup, and it was the week after the Rugby World Cup final, and I joined a team called Auckland University, and four of the World Cup winning All Blacks were playing for that team.
So hold on, you just stayed around?
I stayed around, that's right. What you did in the amateur days, right? Yeah. So I actually had a job that I was starting in London in the January of 1988, and this was July 1987, so I was staying on in New Zealand purposely. I'd left my job and went off to New Zealand with Scotland, and I was hanging around afterwards. Great New Zealand friends I had. So I eventually plumped for this team, Auckland University, who were a club side, nothing necessarily to do. You didn't have to be a student or anything at the university. So I played, and my first game was a week after the Rugby World Cup final. And Grant Fox was still celebrating the All Blacks victory. So I played fullback, and the previous fullback had broken his leg about 2 weeks earlier. So it was a natural opportunity for me. So I was taking the kicks. There was a guy called Hank, and Hank was from America. He didn't really understand the geography of Great Britain and Ireland. And so he said, "Jeez, Gavin, you're bloody hopeless after I miss my 10th kick," or something like that. "Away home to Scotland, Paddy," he called me. And as a result of this, he shouted from the touchlines, and as a result of this, I was called Paddy. So every time I see Sean Fitzpatrick, he calls me Paddy, and a few of the other guys, "How are you doing, Paddy?" And I think it's quite a nice story. Harmless.
Mark of respect. and a more serious point, on a personal note, so I share something with you. My great aunt died a few years ago, and she had Parkinson's, battled it for years. And she's someone I thought of when I heard that I was going to be interviewing you, because I'd read before that you are touched by this in your family too. Do you mind talking about that?
Not at all. Yeah, my wife has had Parkinson's since 2003. She's a wonderful lady. She's very courageous. She's very upbeat the whole time. And, you know, we got to the stage a couple of years ago that life was getting a bit tough. And, you know, we undertook this amazing operation called deep brain stimulation. It essentially involves a couple of electrodes going into either side of the brain and fed through some wires in with a battery pack that was placed just in her above her left breast under the skin. And this sends little pulses into the brain, and it sort of tricks the brain a wee bit into thinking she doesn't have Parkinson's. And as a result, the drugs that have been massively reduced that she has to take, and all the side effects, the nasty side effects that you get with the drugs, as a consequence, have been massively reduced. So her health is very much better than it has been a couple of years ago, and she's doing really well, and she's a great source of inspiration to many people, including myself. And, you know, we contrast that with Dodie Weir. Mm. Dodie Weir's, as many people here in Ireland will know, has been diagnosed with motor neuron disease, and there is no cure for motor neuron. Joost van der Westhuizen had it and died a number of years ago. And, you know, Dodie has touched the world of rugby, and you know, I'm sure people in Ireland are as saddened to hear about Dodie's situation. So, notwithstanding my wife's situation, there are always people that are worse off, and one of these people, sadly, is Dodie Weir. So Dodie's going great guns. There's a thing called Dodie's Gump, G-U-M-P. So if people want to go on the website and look out for Dodie's Gump, it's all about supporting Dodie, just raising some money and some awareness for motor neuron. And, you know, my wife's doing pretty well after her surgery, so there's plenty more money going into Parkinson's than there is to motor neuron. So it was a nice lead-in there.
I'm glad to hear that there is progress being made, sincerely. Before we let you go, make a call for the weekend.
Well, I want Scotland to not be out of it. I'd like them to be competitive. I'd like them to be in the running with 15, 20 minutes to go. And if they are, I think we can cause Ireland a few problems. There's no disgrace to losing to Ireland. There will be no disgrace to losing to Ireland, for they're a very, very strong side. But I would love for Scotland to just step up from where they were a fortnight ago, a bit like after they played the All Blacks in the autumn test, and then they played Australia the following week and really put Australia to the sword. And, you know, no one's suggesting in Scotland they're not capable of putting Ireland to the sword, but if we can give them a very good game and we're in the running, then we'll have a chance. That's what I would like to see.
And you're partly responsible, I believe, for Paddy Cullen's being renamed the Flower of Scotland this weekend, are you?
Well, I'm not sure I'm responsible, but delighted that there's a pub there that is certainly going to be, I think, a source of enjoyment and you know, bonhomie between the Irish and the Scots supporters. And, you know, Guinness are right behind that, and looking forward to having a few pints of the black stuff myself.
Excellent. Gavin Hastings, thank you very much.
Thank you.